श्रील गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री राधा शरद बिहारी जी की जय, श्री गिरिराज महाराज की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमानंद हरि हरि बोल। सो प्रणाम टू ऑल ऑफ यू, थैंक्स सो मच फॉर कमिंग, गुड आफ्टरनून, माय प्लेजर टू बी हियर Eastern side of North Carolina, one more time, Giriraj Mandir. So, we are continuing today and these days and the next weekend, with at least some days next weekend, with a series of lectures that we have started some weeks ago in Kansas, about Brahma Stuti, or the prayers of Brahma. So I'll make, since I'm starting in this area to speak about this, I'll make a brief review of what we have very quickly, what's the background of these prayers, as you may know already, which happened to appear in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which come after the famous section known as Brahma Vimohan Lila, or the bewilderment of the smartest person on the universe. Something like this is this implication. If you think of the smartest person, you won't think about him or her as bewildered. But here you have the topmost smart person in the topmost level of bewilderment. That's a very crucial point on the Bhagavatam, which in the context of such an unusual combination of facts, smartest, fully bewildered, very important points are made in that section, very important section. In one sense, we could say the most important section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in one sense. Because, as we know, Brahma meets Krishna at the beginning of creation. Brahma is the first created being, if you will, in every cycle. So he meets Krishna, but in somewhat formal situation, he accepts him as his guru. There is some special interaction, and Brahma expresses some desire for eventual embrace of fraternal bhakti with Krishna. So Krishna says, tatastu, so be it. So work in progress, some ages in between. And eventually when Krishna is manifesting his divine exploits here on earth, in Dwapara Yuga, he kills Agasura at one point. The killing of Agasura creates a whole event on earth. The devas come, throw flowers, sing songs, because very big, again, cave-like snake and very small boy killing the snake. So Brahma came to see what was going on there, and he was somehow bewildered by the situation. And of course, in the context of that, Krishna and his friends had their very first picnic in their life. So you can imagine how excited you are in your first picnic with your friends, totally free from the shackles of maternal, paternal affection and doing whatever you want. No limits. So Brahma witnessed all these dynamics. Krishna in the fullest of his informality. And Krishna in Vrindavan is the god of informality, if you will. Eating with whatever hand he wants and taking from the hands of his friends, as we know. Picnic is picnic. So Brahma starts to be considerably bewildered at this point. And then he thinks, he doesn't seem to be the same person I saw at the beginning of creation, my guru, my father, my everything in many senses. So somehow he put Krishna to test, and as we know, Krishna, Brahma tried to kidnap Krishna's friends and cubs, but that didn't happen. Brahma thought it happened, but didn't happen. Some illusory expansion was there for Brahma to be starting to be bewildered. That's the first of the four heads starting to spin. First bewilderment. This bewilderment 2.0, 4.0, because four heads. No? So eventually, as we know, Krishna expands and as each of the calves and friends for a whole year on earth. So everything continues as if nothing happened. Nobody thinks, oh, where are all these kids and calves? But Brahma returns after that year, one of his moments, and to see, well, what's going on? I mean, nothing is going on in the sense of everything continues normal. So Brahma goes to this cave that he thinks he put them, and there were the illusory forms of them. And then he returned to Vrindavan, and there they were, the friends and calves. So he returned to the cave. He was thinking, maybe when I'm going here, Krishna's taking them and putting on the other side. When I'm going here, Krishna's taking them. But that was not the fact. So that's second head starts to spin, basically. And eventually, from all these forms of calves and cowherds, which were actually Krishna's expansions, different forms of Bhagavan start to manifest in front of Narayan, and all these forms worshipped by Brahmas, hundreds of Brahmas, and Brahma witnessing that. So, third head spinning at this point, from Mohan, getting closer to V Mohan. And at this point, this is a very crucial point that our Guru Maharaj likes to emphasize. Main line, main theme of the Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. Paribhas Sutra is this line around which the whole text has to be seen in context of. Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam, which means Krishna is the source of all other faces of the Absolute, according to our Gaudiya tradition. From the topmost intimate form of the Absolute comes all the other forms which are not so as intimate as Krishna. So this establishes this section more than any other place in the Bhagavatam, because from that single Krishna, unlimited Narayans, unlimited gods appears from one little Krishna. So Brahma at this point again has his three of his four heads spinning, and after seeing this like extraordinary expression of majesty, there is no more expression, higher expression of majesty in the whole Bhagavatam than this one. And this doesn't happen in Vaikuntha, in Dwarka, in Mathura, but bucolic Vrindavan. Showing fullest Aishwarya is there in the backdrop, but it's buried under layers and layers of intimacy. It's not required for the daily interaction, but it's there. And the forehead remains to spin. So what happens that for that to happen? All this unlimited majestic manifestation wrap up, disappear, and only Krishna remains with the morsel of food in his left, not right hand. And he's like looking for his calves and friends. After showing all this, and Brahma's like, oh my God, the foreheads are like spinning like nothing, and he falls from his swan, he touches the earth. Devas are not famous for that, they're famous for not touching the earth. We are from another tattva, another planet. But he puts his head, he leaves aside his ego as I'm Brahma, and puts his hand on Krishna's feet, starts to pray, crying, bathing his feet, doing abhishek to Krishna's feet with his tears, taking turns with his four heads and offering pranam to Krishna. And in a very emotional, deep way, starting to pray, realizing, oh, he is the very object, he's the very person I've met at the beginning of creation, but now I'm meeting even an upgraded version of that what I see at the beginning, which was more formal, if you will. Now I want to talk you about. Now I'm receiving a trailer of that. I didn't pass the test, but I have another chance for sure. So the sadhana of Brahma matured to the point of having the object of his affection in front of him. Brahma's realizing this now with full repentance, realizing the mistake he made, but at the same time the fortune he has to have Krishna there. So he starts to pray, and then therefore Brahma's stuti begins, which is a series of 40 prayers through which Brahma establishes basically all the siddhanta, all the tattva, or our philosophical foundation for our bhava project, for our project of spiritual emotion. Because we aspire to develop spiritual emotion, bhava. And bhava means not just emotion, as we spoke the other day, because all of us can become emotional. I mean, you can become angry, envious. That's emotion, also an emotion. I want to kill you. That's an emotion. Not the most auspicious one, but it's an emotion. So we want specific types of emotion, which are called bhava. And it's a philosophical emotion. In other words, it has philosophy as its foundation. It's not just being carried by the waves of the mind and whatever I feel, that's my bhava. No, no. School might as well say it's not just putting the t-shirt, being the bhava. No, but So in this way, Brahma starts to make sense of what he's feeling for Krishna, his attraction, and trying to, if you will, justify that attraction with philosophy. So in the concept that he having different epiphanies, verse after verse, and presenting this exceptional foundation for all of us also to take advantage of. So that's a very brief recap of what we have been seeing in the last seven lectures, today we're in the ninth one, but I will make a brief recap of the last class, because we always do that, just to continue, because all of the verses have their own connection with the other one, so it's important to have an idea. So, last class we studied verse number 6, because we have two introduction classes, and then we are spending one class per verse, so today we will, in class number 9, we will see verse 7. Last class we saw verse number 6, where basically we spoke about, or Brahma spoke about the formless form, if you will, of the Absolute. So I'll read the verse quickly, and a few words of it, and we start with today's verse. Brahma is saying, O Infinite Being, non-devotees, however, cannot realize you in your full personal feature. Nevertheless, it may be possible for them to realize your expansion as the impersonal supreme by cultivating direct perception of the self within the heart. But they can do this only by purifying their mind and senses of all conceptions of material distinctions and all attachment to material sense objects. Only in this way will your impersonal feature manifest itself to them. So in previous verses to this, Brahma has been speaking how establishing the supremacy of bhakti, jnana sunya bhakti, and many other things, appreciating Krishna's form, qualities, beauty, like awakening to what he has in front of his eyes. No? Still he's in some form of vimoha and bewilderment, but not the other type. The other type was, I think Krishna's an imposter and I will try to test him. And he was like, what's going on here? Now he's realizing what's going on here, and he's bewildered because of that, who Krishna is. He starts to like gradually understand who actually Krishna is, and that creates a bewilderment of its own when you start to have epiphany after epiphany of the Godhead. So Brahma, through the first prayer, is establishing the glory of bhakti in correspondence to the glory of Krishna's form and beauty. And then he starts to mention how other processes like jnana, yoga, and so on, they depend on bhakti to give their corresponding fruits. They cannot be fruitful unto themselves, but how bhakti does not depend on other process and therefore is independent and supreme. And basically, in the last verse to this one, Brahma is saying, if you are a yogi or a jnani and you want to attain your goal, you can do it. You can mix your practice with bhakti and you will attain the non-differentiated feature of the Absolute. We call it Brahman in our particular tradition. So, but of course, Brahma is making here his point, although they may attain that impersonal feature, your exclusive devotees will attain something else, which is what Brahma wants to attain. Will attain you as you are. You have Bhagavad Gita as it is, Krishna as he is. So Brahma was having this type of darshan there. So other processes give their goals by mixing them with bhakti. And of course, the logic is, if every process needs bhakti to be fruitful, what if I just only practice bhakti? How much fruitful will that be? What will be the fruit of such a fruitful engagement? And Krishna's saying, me, here I am, here's the fruit. Brahma is realizing that. I mean, Krishna's not saying anything. We will see that Krishna is not speaking. Brahma is just expressing what his awakening, if you will. But he's having the fruit in front of him. So, but here the point is made. If you want to attain the impersonal feature of Bhagavan, of God, that's possible. We are not condemning that. We are not against that. It may not be our particular choice in our tradition, but it's a feature of the Absolute, which is legal, if you will. It's mentioned in Shastra, Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavan Iti Shabdyate. But due to the particular samskars, impressions we have received in a particular sangha, we are inclined towards we call Saguna Brahman, or the Absolute with features, the Absolute with form, with attributes, with beauty, with names, with lila, loving, possibility of loving interaction, and so on. And Brahma here is also making the point although Nirguna Brahman, or to speak or conceive the Absolute in terms of non-differentiation, is quite tough to conceive. No? Because try to think about something that has no form, qualities. I mean, you have to go beyond thinking, basically. But how, in one sense, it's more difficult to conceive the idea of Saguna Brahman, of speaking about the Absolute, which is eternal and unlimited, but has form. But the form is not limiting him. It's an unlimited form, which we don't have an experience of here. For us, form is generally limiting. It's like, okay, form begins here, ends here, and whatever is inside the form is limited to that form. So what's this notion of unlimited form? A form that doesn't constrict, you say? But as my Guru Maharaj likes to give an example, even from this world, you may be an artist and you have some art latent inside of you, and in order for you to express that art, you need a form. You need a brush, you need a canvas, you need form after form that will facilitate that expression. It's not limiting your expression. So there's a way for form to facilitate instead of limit. So a way of thinking, even beginning from this world, about the possibility of a form that is not constricting. So that all that converges into Krishna's eternal unlimited spiritual form. So for us, Brahman, or the non-differentiated aspect of the Absolute, is mostly considered like one aspect of Krishna, basically. The non-differentiated is an aspect of the fully qualified version, if you will, of the Absolute. Something interesting that also Brahma makes is that Krishna, in one sense you can say Krishna has qualities, or you can say Krishna has form, or Krishna has name, but in another sense, since he is Absolute, and I know it's tricky to speak about in terms of Absolutes, but I mean, he is the Absolute. Krishna, in one sense, has form, name, and qualities, but in another sense, Krishna is his form, his name, and his qualities. Because that what means to be Absolute. It's, you are not different from your form, you are not different from your name, you are not different from your qualities. So we can say he has them, but he is at the same time them. You cannot separate one thing from the other. And of course, this, again, invites us to think about reality in another way, because generally we are not accustomed to think in those terms. Dualistic mind is like, you are here, your attributes are there. If you form is limiting, and again, and here you start to hear all these ideas that you try to access through the mind and through the intellect, but you will find some limit that say, sorry, you cannot enter here. You have to leave that outside the door. Like here, leave your shoes outside. No? One says the shoes personify all this attempt to grasp the Absolute with our own limited tools, basically. Well, you leave them there. Then you can use them. They have some use, no problem. But now you are entering sacred space. So you have to, we have to dispose ourselves from in another way. Brahma also makes this point that the Absolute reveals himself according to our approach. So the Absolute is always the Absolute, but according to how we approach the Absolute, we will meet a particular phase of it. We were given the example of the subway the other day. I don't want to limit the Absolute to a subway, but contemporary example. So you can be waiting for the subway and you look into the tunnel and you see what's the first thing you see if the subway is coming. So you see some light. So you say, okay, that's the subway. You can stay stuck with that idea. Subway, light. Yeah, it's there's light in the subway. But then it gets closer. The more you get closer, or it gets closer to you, whatever the case, you realize, oh, it's not only light. There's also this, like, cars, I don't know, whatever, yeah. Wagons. So there's more to the light. And then this stops and opens the door. Oh, there's people inside the cars. I can enter, I can speak with, I can meet the love of my life in the subway. My point is, that's a whole much more potential than just, oh, there's one light there. No. The light is there. I mean, we are not denying that. But there are other features in that. So, and it all depends from how we approach the subway, if you will. If you just only approach one side, you may feel it's only light. If you just put the light here, it's, oh wow, this is only light. And so on. Mm-hmm. So basically our idea of Brahman as Gaudiya is a little bit different from the idea of some of jnanis, of those jnanis who say only Brahman is real. Huh? Like followers of Sankaracharya will say only the undifferentiated absolute is the real thing, the real deal. Krishna is temporary manifestation of the absolute, bhakti is temporary. So we consider if you think like that, actually you won't be able to attain Brahman, because to attain Brahman, to attain success in jnana, you need bhakti. If you offend bhakti, you don't get the fruit of jnana. So there is place for Brahman, but not considering this is the only thing and everything else is illusory. Mm-hmm. And for us, someone who attains that Brahman does not lose his or her individuality, but just the experience of being an individual becomes suspended for eternity. But it's, the individual is there, but just deep sleep, as we sometimes example is given. So, that was my brief recap, 20 minutes already. So now we'll start with today's verse. And we will conclude today this first section, because although there are 40 prayers, there are kind of sections in some particular line or another. So today, seventh verse will be the closing of one first section. Brahma will continue to express his upgraded vimohan or bewilderment in connection in this case to how impossible it is to fathom the endless qualities of Sri Hari. He already mentioned something like this. You are unlimited, you are not different from your qualities, which are unlimited. But now he will further go in that direction and make a very interesting example and in connection to that. So, let's go to the verse. Let me share it. Sorry that I'm not prepared to share it with you here. With some form of whatever. Black whiteboard, they say. We don't have whiteboard for the next time. Yeah, no problem. So, the verse says, verse number 7, this is in Upajayati Chandra, which is a particular meter. All the verses are, not all indifferent, but it's not the same meter in all the verses. So this is 11 syllables per line, Upajati. You can count them if you want. Gunatmanaste pigunam bimatum itabatirnasya kaishiresya kalena jairba bimita sukalpai bupam shabhake mihika dyubasha. So, let's go to the the translation. It says like this. Even for those highly qualified people who, given the time, might be able to count all the atoms of the earth, the snowflakes in the sky, or the rays of the sun, have to be pretty qualified, who amongst them could possibly count the qualities of you, who are the embodiment of all qualities and have descended to this earth for the welfare of all? So this is a prayer of Brahma in this particular. Remember, Brahma is pretty, in all this, like, realizing his offense, full repentance, totally fortunate of having Krishna in front of him, crying at the feet of Bhagavan, realizing his prospect and potentials. In the context of all that, he's mentioning all these verses. Mm-hmm. So he's beginning by saying this. Now, even maybe someone highly qualified to count in very minute detail, try to imagine, atoms of the earth. I mean, here we have the smartest guy in the universe saying that. The point is, if he has not done so yet, he means that may be pretty difficult. But let's be hypothetical. Maybe if someone gets to do so, even in that case, the question, the rhetorical question is, who among those super intelligent counters... It's not about counting, but chanting, remember? Who about those, who among those, could possibly count your qualities? Of course, the implication is nobody. Again, I am the smartest guy, I mean, not I, Brahma, and I'm totally bewildered about what's going on here now. And he concludes saying, you, and of you, who are the embodiment of all qualities and who have descended on earth for the welfare of everyone. And everyone, Brahma includes himself in the everyone. I am now receiving the fruit of your coming to this plane, avatar. So let's go to the word by word of this verse quickly, and then we will try to share some further words on this. So, the first words of this verse is gunatmana. Very interesting word. Gunatmana. Gunatmana. So, guna means quality, and atmana means many things, as we will see. So, now I will give in just the official generic definition of each word. Then, when we go to the explanation, we'll go to the unlimited possibilities of each word, basically. So, gunatmana means the possessor of all superior qualities. Brahma referring to Krishna as such. Or he whose qualities are the soul, atma. And te, the next word, te means of yours. So he whose qualities are your soul. Again, implying you are none different from your gunas, from your qualities. Then the word api means even. Then gunan again, qualities. Oh, you soul of all qualities, even if, and now comes bimatum, enumerate. If someone can enumerate, hita avatir nasya. First, he refers again to Krishna in another way. Hita avatir nasya. Avatir has to do with avatar, no? Like, what's the verse? I recite in my Mangalacharan always about Mahaprabhu. Anarpita charim chira karuna avatirna kalu. Avatirna kalu. So he says, hita avatirnasya, which means you who descended avatar for the benefit of all. Hita means like for compassion for all. So he, another way he's referring to Krishna. Remember all these names that in different prayers in the Bhagavatam we find, like when we studied Gopi Gita, Rama, or whatever, Yugal Gita, Venu Gita, or Brahma Stuti. Krishna is addressed with different names, which are not just casual. Okay, now we have to invoke some names so the meter of the verse fits properly. So, okay, let's call him like this. No. Has to do with something the one doing the prayer is feeling at the moment. No? So here he's referring to Krishna on one side, you, the soul of all qualities, because Brahma is realizing, I mean, you are the soul of all qualities and your qualities are your soul. Both terms can be there. And hita avatarnasya, avatarnasya, you who descend for the welfare of all, starting by me, Brahma says. I am the one who, as we will see, deserve it the less. I offended you from tip to toe, trying to kidnap your dearmost, and you're showing such mercy. So that means you really have descended to show mercy to fallen people like this four-headed guy here. So, ke means which persons, ishire are able, now comes the example, asya of this, which means of this universe, kalena means in course of time. So in course of time, some people is able to, as we've mentioned, enumerate what, jaihi, by whom, means Babimita means were counted, sukalpaihi by skilled persons, and now comes the three examples given, which we'll see are in order of subtlety. Bhu pamshabaha, the atoms of the planet Earth, that's the grossest example, although it sounds pretty complicated already. Kemihika, snowflakes in the sky, so we are going from Earth to higher realms. And Dhyu basaha, the rays in the heavens. So, those are that's the word by word of this verse. Even if they can't count this, they cannot count you. You are uncountable, in one sense. Everything is, in other words, is, sometimes we can say, everything is measurable except for Krishna, in one sense. Potentially speaking, hypothetically speaking, you can even get to measure and count everything, but not him. So now I'll continue sharing with you Bhaktivedanta Bhavanubhat. Bhaktivedanta Bhavanubhat, for those who have not been hearing these classes, is a commentary that our Guru Maharaj is making on this Brahma Stuti. And he will include that in his forthcoming book, Sakya Mandala. And when I asked him for blessings to speak on this topic, he told me, oh, but I've written a commentary on that in my forthcoming book. So I say, okay. So which are the implications of that? I say, well, if you want, I can give it so you can share with the devotees. Say, oh, yes. Yeah. So we are beginning in this way. We are reading what he mentions, and then we continue with the commentaries of some other elder commentators of the Bhagavatam. So his commentary is called Bhaktivedanta Bhavanubhad, which means some kind of summary of this, of the gist of the verse according to other commentators, but in the words of the author, basically, in this case, Guru Maharaj. So he says, it's a brief one in this case. Krishna manifests himself in this world out of compassion for his devotees. He begins with that particular point. Krishna descends, avatar, out of compassion for his devotees. That quality is easily understood. But no one can understand the extent of his unlimited transcendental qualities. Not even some computer genius capable of counting all the atoms of the earth, a blizzard's flakes of snow, or all of the shining particles of sunlight. And here's one footnote that he adds, which says, Sankarsana, the expansion of Balaram, is said to have counted every atom. So someone did that already. Yet, even his source, Balaram, expressed his inability to fully understand Krishna earlier in this Brahma Vimohan Lila. I didn't mention that part in my summary. Sorry, so many things to say. But when Krishna expanded himself as each of the calves and each of the boys during 1 year, nobody knew about that. Only Krishna. Not even Balaram, because Balaram was not present there because that day was his monthly birthday, according to Nakshatra, according to the constellation he was born. But almost when the year is over, Balaram starts to observe, and he was looking, there is something strange here, because all the mothers and fathers of Vrindavan are exhibiting extreme love for their children. Remember, the children are Krishna's expansions. The other children were in another prakash, or in another portal in which Krishna kept them, not with Brahma in Brahma's cave. That were another illusory expression. So all the boys were Krishna and all the calves were Krishna during that year. And it is said that all the parents and all the cows wanted to have Krishna as their son. So somehow Krishna was reciprocating with that desire for a year. So they were loving their children as if they will love Krishna. So Balaram was wondering, this is strange. And this point is important. Balaram is saying, the parents are loving their kids more than Krishna. That's totally weird. You follow my point? how can they love their child more than Krishna? There's something strange here. Do you follow? I mean, here in this world, that's normal. I mean, we are trying to love Krishna a little bit more than something. But in Vrindavan, that's a given. I mean, you love Krishna first, more than anything. Naturally, not like a forced rule. You love everyone, but Krishna is the one that everyone is loving the most. So there's no conflict because everyone is loving Krishna the most. It's not that the mother is loving Krishna the most and her child says, hey, Ma, why are you loving Krishna more than me? No, because the mother can say the same to the child. You are also loving Krishna more than me. Oh, yeah, you are right. So everyone loves Krishna more than everyone else, so there's perfect harmony. But during this year, Balaram was like, why the cows are loving their calves that much, as if they were Krishna? Because Balaram knows how much everyone loves Krishna and how much everyone loves each other in the context of loving Krishna. So this was the strange idea, the Vimohan of Balaram. Everyone was Vimohan at this point, not only Balaram, and Brahma, for different reasons. So Balaram Singh said, everyone is loving, I mean, their children more than Krishna. Something strange going on here. That shouldn't happen. Everyone should love Krishna more. You follow the point, huh? That's the norm of this world. I love more my car than Krishna. What to speak, my children, whatever, no? So, my dog, my TV, my cell phone, whatever, no? Have more attachment, more absorption, whatever, no? But for Balaram, I was like, oh, what's going on? So my point is again, Ananta Shesh, remember the point, counted all the atoms, and the source of Ananta Shesh, Balaram, was bewildered in connection to Krishna. So the point is, yeah, you have someone who counted the atoms, but that has nothing to do with Krishna. So Guru Maharaj started saying also here, Krishna descends for the welfare of his devotees, which is something mentioned in this verse. He says that's relatively easy to understand in comparison to the extent of his unlimited qualities. But also I will say, as an addition to that, at one point that's not so easy to understand also. Krishna says, Negita paritranaya sadunam. I come for... First, he says three things. Why he comes. Sambhavami, yuge. Age after age. Paritranaya sadunam vinashaya chaduskritam dharma samstapanartya. I come to protect my devotees, chastise the miscreants, and establish the principles of religion, if you will. So it is said that the first one is the most important one. I come to protect my devotees. But the point is, devotees, technically speaking, do not need protection. They already are protected by Krishna. And they fully trust. No? They feel what?
Rakshashita
Vishvasito. Rakshashati Vishvaso. No? They have full faith Krishna will protect me. And it's not just like full faith and Krishna is fooling them and they are not being protected. They are protected. This is how the Gita begins and this is how the Gita ends. At the beginning of the Gita, not first verse, but at the beginning, Krishna is saying, Masu Chaha. Conclusion of the Gita, Krishna is saying, Masu Chaha. Which means, do not fear. Do not worry, do not fear. I was reading the other day, who was that person? I think it was Richard Rohr. And he mentioned that in the Bible, someone counted and there's this idea of do not fear, do not worry. It's there 365 times. So one per day of the year. Just to remember, do not worry, do not fear, because you are being protected. If you, of course, act accordingly, you know? I mean, if you don't feel protected, it's not because you are not being protected. I mean, you are maybe running out of the shelter, basically. So the point is, why Krishna is coming to protect his devotees? I mean, they are protected. I mean, to say protect his devotees sounds like an oxymoron. Devotee is someone who is sheltered in Krishna. So which protection do they need? And of course, the deeper meaning is they need to be protected from themselves. Because here Krishna refers to those advanced sadhakas who are so much suffering in separation from Krishna that they cannot tolerate their life anymore. In separation from him. So Krishna comes personally to give them his darshan and take them to his abode. So in that sense, he's coming to protect those types of devotees from themselves, if you will. So, that said, let's go to some of the commentaries by our acharyas. Also interesting, this idea of even if you can count this and that, you cannot count Krishna's qualities. This is not the only verse in the Bhagavatam mentioning this. For those who are verse neurotics, you can study 2740 and 1142. Those two verses are almost the same verse as this one. They are the same, the gist is the same. Even if someone could count the atoms or this or that, they won't be able to enumerate your qualities. So let's begin with Sridhar Swami's commentary, the ancient Sridhar Swami path. He says, the rhetorical question here implies that nobody can count Krishna's qualities because they are unlimited, as he is unlimited. So So again, if he is unlimited, everything connection to him is also unlimited. Are you going to say Krishna is unlimited, but he has limited, whatever, names, forms? Mahaprabhu say, nam nama kari bahuda. You have unlimited names. Here you have unlimited qualities. And in different verses, you have unlimited lilas. Ananta katara sasya, which Uddhava is saying. To speak about you is called ananta kata. You are called ananta, therefore, ananta means without end, endless. So you are endless, so to speak about you is endless, an endless project. Ananta kata. There's no end to how Paul would, we can say, ikshati ina shabda. What can you say about the Absolute? You cannot fully say everything about him, but you can try to touch one point in one infinite line, basically. So Srila Sivaranasa will give that example. You have an infinite line, and the only thing you can do in relation to the infinite is touch one point of that infinite line. And you will collapse by touching that one point. You will be totally overwhelmed by that single point. So you do not try to think, and what about if I can take the whole? You cannot. I mean, try to deal with that point. Just try. You are collapsing with the point, that single point. Try to deal with that. Do not even think, what about the whole line or something? It's not possible. Only one point is making your foreheads of Brahma spin. What you speak with our little one? So Sridhar Swami then says, again, he's unlimited, his qualities are unlimited. He's called Gunatmata, Gunatmana, sorry. Which means, another way of translating Gunatmana is, Krishna is the presiding deity of all qualities. He's like the Ishtadev of all good quality. Quality means good quality. So he's the Guna. Guna means quality. Guna Ishtadevata. Sometimes that is said. If we see something good, of course, that's an indication of something that exists in Krishna in the fullest way. Krishna is trying to give a glimpse of that in sections in the Gita, such as when he says, I don't know, of the most powerful manifestation of nature in this particular department, that's who I am, the lion in the shark on water, the lion in the jungle, and this and that, and the ocean. So again, it's not that literally you have to do copy-paste that idea, but he's trying to give this notion, whatever is most, he says that in the Gita, whatever is the most majestic, that's just one fraction of my majesty. And he's speaking there in majestic terms. And we know that's not the all in all about him. Majesty is the kindergarten version of who Krishna actually is in Vrindavan for us. So there again, there's no limit. Sometimes, for example, regarding counting or mentioning Krishna's qualities, of course our acharyas have given some lists. As the Jiva Goswami in the Krama Sandarbha, he mentions 85 qualities of Krishna, which already is quite a good number. No? Try to think about 85 qualities from you. It's like, okay. I can have. Think about 85 negative stuff, 108 if you want. But so he's putting 85. No, Srila Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he's mentioning 64 qualities of Krishna. But again, this is just a way of somehow summarizing something unlimited, not just pointing to special things, but there's no actual end to them. And for example, Rupa Goswami makes this point also. From these 64 qualities, there are 50 that we can develop on some level. Not all of them, and those that we can develop on some level. So it's not also like whatever we have, Krishna has, it's on the other way around. No? Whatever Krishna has, some of what Krishna has. We have on some level. And some other things we don't even have on any level. Not even Narayan has that on any level. So what to speak of us? Brahma, etc. And again, he and his qualities, their relation is permanent. Now, in Nyaya, which is like the logic system in India, they use this example, like the relation between sugar and sweetness is permanent. You cannot just like, I mean, you take out one, you don't no longer have the other one. No? The relation exists as long as the sugar exists, if you will. No? Sweetness will be there. It's not that I tasted this bitter sugar. It's like, no, it's not happening. No? It's not sugar, basically. Although they may sell it as such now somewhere. But the relationship can never change. That's the idea. No? The attributes of a substance define the substance itself, basically, in this case, sugar, sweetness. And so similarly, the qualities of Krishna are eternal eternal in relationship with Him. I mean, His eternal qualities are eternal. And again, He is His qualities. I know it's difficult to conceive, but it's important to get accustomed. Not just He has qualities, He has body. Like, He is something, and He has... Like, if I say, I have my house, but you hopefully don't think I am my house, although through attachment we play out that idea, no? As Guru Maharaj will say. No? We won't say, I am my car, but if I tell you now, as Guru Maharaj will say, oh, someone stole your car, you will just, I'm lost. I say, no, the car is lost, not you. But you are so much, like, invested in the car that you feel like this kind of... I mean, if someone like crushes your car, you feel, I crushed you. And it's totally separate. So through attachment, we create this type of merging. But the point is, there is some difference. But in connection to Krishna, His qualities, He is His qualities, He is His name, Avinatvam Namino, He is His body. Then Sridhar Swami continues in his commentary, presenting some argument in connection to what the verse says. Someone may object, nonetheless, that still in time, nothing is impossible for the scientists. Does this argument sound contemporary? So this was said by Sridhar Swami thousands of years ago, interestingly. Because again, someone is saying, oh, Krishna's qualities are unlimited, you cannot count them. And someone may say, for scientists, nothing is impossible. They are all about counting. So at one point they will reach how many. They will know how many and analyze and eventually do something with those qualities from Krishna so we can benefit from them and manipulate and play them out through artificial intelligence. We can become, we can make little Krishnas here and there and whatever. No? So, but that's interestingly, that's the very meaning of Maya. No? Maya, the idea of Maya means to measure. No? To count somehow is to measure. If you count, means like you control, you know how much there is. So you exercise some form of control on that. Okay, I can count means that's limited, so I can count it. So when I can count, it's in my grasp. I know how much it is. But when we speak about Krishna, we have to leave that ego out, because we cannot count Him, basically. We are not supposed to, again, to count. We are our rounds. We are supposed to chant. No? We are just counting. Counting means Maya, to measure, to count. No? So he mentions this argument. No? Someone may say, for scientists, nothing is impossible. So eventually they may be able to count. So again, here the example is given. Well, those very genius-like scientists... And Brahma is saying that, and Brahma is the most genius scientist. I mean, Brahma is a scientist. If you want to explore what does mean to be a scientist, I mean, if you are the architect of the whole multiverse, I mean, you have to have some good head for that. He has four. And there are Brahmas with more heads in another universes, no? So that's another topic. So here there are three examples, Sridhar Swami says, progressively more and more elaborate, no? Coming from earth, snow, and light, no? So finer and finer, no? More subtle. So he said, thus, it is to be understood that there is an increasing difficulty in counting their virtually infinite particles. Again, atoms and snowflakes, sunlight, more and more complex. So Brahma will then reply, even if that were to happen, which again, he has not reached that, but well, we heard that Sankarsan did that, even if that were to happen, still Krishna's qualities will be impossible to count. So the idea is, of course, stop trying to count them. Try to surrender, basically. Of course, the surrender will come when you realize I cannot count them. Don't try to impose surrender before you don't realize I cannot count them. You follow my point? I cannot tell you, don't try to understand God. Okay, try to understand Him to the point that you realize I cannot understand Him. And then don't try to understand Him. That means you already understood Him as much as you can understand anything. And the rest will be understood through another method. Gyan Sunya Bhakti, we spoke in the third verse. Brahma already said that. Gyan Priyasam Udapa Senamante. In the words of Srila Siamaras, brain dead bhakti. Instead of trying to go with your head towards the Absolute, put your head on the ground in front of the Absolute. That will convey much more knowledge just doing this movement than trying to figure out everything. And Brahma tried, again, very hard. It didn't work. So those are the words of Sridhar Swami. Let's continue with Srila Sanatan Goswami in his Brihad Vaishnav Tosha. So here comes another nice interpretation of the word Gunatmana. Remember, Gunatmana could mean he's the presiding deity of all qualities, his soul is none different from the qualities, and so on. So instead here, Sanatana Goswami, instead of your qualities are your very same soul, Sanatana Goswami says, you are the soul of all qualities, which is similar to the idea of presiding deity of all qualities. Like implying, you give life to the qualities, or you give meaning to any quality. In other words, any quality, like, devoid of a connection with you, is not permanent. It's not, technically speaking, a quality. If you want to speak in terms of virtue, something for something to be a virtue, it has to have eternal. I mean, if something is virtuous only for this weekend, and on Monday it becomes something else, I mean, how much of a virtue that is, how much of a quality. So it has to have permanence, and that has to be in connection with this permanent center, with Krishna. So Sanatana Goswami implies that Brahma is saying here to Krishna, Gunatmana, you give life to the qualities. If you are not in connection with that, as Srila Prabhupada will say, it's like you have many zeros, but no one at the beginning. So you can have 1 million zeros, one zero, all of that is zero. But put the one in, the more you, just you put the one, all the zeros acquire value immediately. Then he says, nobody can understand your qualities, but particularly one cannot understand the extent of your qualities when you appear in the world. Like, that's much more like bewildering. I'm experiencing that, Brahma is saying. Because you come to the world, you seem one of us, you execute Nara Lila, human like Paisana, you have picnic. I mean, you are the Absolute having picnic, you know. Have you ever thought about that? Can the Absolute go for picnic? That's an interesting theological question. Is there a place for picnic in the life of the Absolute? We will say yes in our tradition. The Absolute is not devoid of picnic. He's the Absolute. He has to taste all taste. And in picnic, you have the chance in literally tasting this and tasting that. You know? So here is presenting again the idea of avatar, which is a very interesting word that sometimes is translated as incarnation, but that's not technically correct, because incarnation actually means in carne. Carne means like flesh, you know? So entering the body, if you will. But the concept of avatar means from up to down. Basically, higher reality expresses itself here without being touched by the influence of this plane. So it's unlimited accessing three-dimensional plane, because, I mean, that's what material existence is, three-dimensional. But the unlimited is coming here without becoming three-dimensional, although he appears so to the three-dimensional eye, basically. No? When Krishna came, it's not that everyone saw him as, oh wow, you're unlimited. Duryodhan wanted to tie Krishna at one point. And Krishna like expand and say, well, see, try to begin with some other form of Damodar Lila. Try to tie me. And Duryodhana was like, bring me more rope. No. But he was not Yashoda for sure, no? So he didn't have an eye of affection, prema netra. So even he saw that, and he didn't accept Krishna as the supreme. So he was quite stubborn in his vision. So he didn't see something extraordinary there. So here again, Brahma is saying, remember we said before, just to understand the non-differentiated form of the Absolute, that's complex. What to speak when the Absolute Unlimited takes the shape and engages in special difficulties. Bhagavan as Braja Krishna, as a Gopa, and playing and doing all the things that Brahma is. No, that's particularly astonishing. Not so easy to understand. Not so easy to understand means, of course, in one sense, it's very simple, user-friendly, and charming, and in that sense, understandable, but that only happens by grace, by mercy. It's only by grace, by mercy, that we can have a feeling for all these ideas. If you put grace aside of the equation, I mean, it's not so easy to understand. I mean, you can see how many people misunderstand, misread Krishna Lila and think this is totally, I mean, degraded stuff even to that point for years and centuries and so on. So you need the grace ingredient in the equation. So Brahma is realizing all this. Remember, he misread Krishna Lila just some few minutes ago. People, you know, this hoax. No. This guy is an imposter. No. This is totally ordinary. What are all these devas celebrating? There's nothing special here. Some minutes after, he's realizing, my gosh, this is the most extraordinary thing on earth. So try to imagine someone having that type of epiphany. No? 5 minutes ago, I thought this is totally ordinary stuff from tip to toe, and now I'm realizing this is the most extraordinary thing I could possibly imagine. So the contrast, and you going through that contrast. And Brahma, again, is a smart person. He's not really like a fool. So all his capacities are collapsing in front of this. So then again, he says, you have appeared in this world to benefit all jivas, hitavatirnasya. Sanatana Goswami says, the Lord reveals qualities suitable for the benefit of each jiva when he comes. He reveals in different ways according to... And he says, since the jivas are unlimited, which is already an important point, their natures are unlimited, their conditions are unlimited, and therefore the qualities that Krishna will reveal to them will be unlimited. So what to speak about, again, God being unlimited. There's unlimited number of souls. Because sometimes this idea comes. What will happen, and these were presented by Haridas Thakur to Mahaprabhu. Oh, Mahaprabhu, you are delivering the whole universe. So the whole universe will become empty. So what's the purpose of the universe? There's nobody there. And Mahaprabhu say, no, it's nothing happen like that. It will be filled again, because there are only the jivas you see in this universe are not the only ones. And you say, well, but there's a limited number of universes. No. So we speak about material energy as something limited in one sense, but in another sense, it's unlimited also. There's unlimited number of universes and unlimited numbers of jivas. Just to speak about unlimited, smoke starts to come. Because again, it shows collapse in this particular function. It's not that the unlimited doesn't exist, but it's just that this is not the way. So this is the idea here. Unlimited jivas in unlimited unique situations, qualities and conditions. And in order for you to deliver each of them specifically, you show unlimited qualities. Because you are dealing with an unlimited environment of diversity. Again, it makes our head collapse, but sometimes it's nice to do that exercise, because if not, sometimes we become so much like constrained to, okay, only this and me and the house and this spot and this is the all in all. And stop for a minute and think there are no limit to jivas in the universe, or whatever, anything of connection to the unlimited. So that invokes bigger picture immediately. So whatever whatever glass of water you were drowning in your own mind, like, this is the only thing. You invoke unlimited. And you say, okay, what consequence is this stuff that I'm complaining about or in anxiety about, I mean, from the scope of eternity, from the scope of the unlimited, how much important is what I'm doing? Hopefully it's important. I mean, you can do something important in connection to the unlimited, but sometimes you will find, this has nothing to do with the unlimited, it's just nonsense. And I'm taking it so seriously. That's the worst thing. No. So sometimes we need to get back in context with reality by invoking this type of like 2-minute meditations, if you will, to acquire sobriety in very quick time. So again, these qualities that Brahma is mentioning, that Krishna is not different from, is also what makes Krishna. Krishna means all attractive. Basically, that means also he has all attractive qualities, because if you take all the qualities from Krishna, you cannot say he's all attractive. He has no qualities, but he's all attractive. It's like, what? No. A person is beautiful, not because, technically speaking, although we, in conditioned life, may think otherwise, but a person is beautiful not because of some perfectly sculptured body, but because of beautiful attributes and qualities in a substantial way. Of course, Krishna has everything. Perfect body, spiritual one, not different from it, and so on. But the point is, without attributes, we cannot even speak about beauty. No? So Krishna is the all-beautiful. So you need qualities to speak about beauty. I mean, you will never hear the word Brahman is beautiful, because Brahman is nirgun, has no qualities. So Brahman. Brahman. It is nirgun, no quality. So beauty is not... Beauty is a quality. No. Also. And yeah, just some ideas in connection to Krishna being all beautiful, all attractive, and this idea of his qualities in connection to who he is. So Brahma is realizing all this. We have some minutes, no problem. We have some few more commentaries to go through. Srila Jiva Goswami now, with his Lagu Vaishnava Tosani. He says, the previous verses, including the present one, lead to the conclusion of Krishna's greatness in order to start another topic. So he makes this point clear. And from next verse on, we'll start another topic. Of course, they are all connected. But this first section of 7 verses kind of establishes a particular set of notions. So let's see what Jiva Goswami says about Gunatmana. Every acharya has explained Gunatmana from different perspectives. Jiva Goswami says Gunatmana can mean the vitalizer of qualities. You pronounce like this? Vitalizer? Mm-hmm. Like vitality? The one who... Okay. So those qualities which were latent in other avatars but not visible are now visible in you, Brahma is implying. By saying Gunatmana. All your avatars have different qualities, but none of them necessarily are showing all of them at every moment. All this becomes evident in you. Because Krishna is still Bhagavan, so yeah. All the avatars are showing aspects of who you are in totality. Or, Jiva Goswami says, remember, our commentators will give an idea and then we'll say, or, and showing different possibilities. Gunatmanaha can mean of the person whose qualities belong to his Swarup. We already explained that. Atmana can refer to one's own identity. So, in other words, Brahma is saying to Krishna, your qualities are not different from your soul. If you want to put it like that. From your Atma. Your Atma, your qualities. As we spoke the other day, on a different level, but something similar. We are not different from the eventual Siddha Deha and so on. That becomes one with us. So Jiva Goswami then starts to quote many verses from Shastra, at least his style, to support what he's saying, to give it clear, this is not my imagination, but this has already been realized by many before me. So I will share one of them, which makes this point that God's qualities are one with himself. This is one verse from Brahma Tarka. It says, Hari is said to have qualities because the qualities are his nature. A quality of Vishnu should not be thought to be separate from him, nor should a quality of liberated souls be considered separate from them. So he makes this connection, try to not analyze them in dual terms. Here they are their qualities. If they are on the liberated platform, there's no more dichotomy, the duality between them and something. They are fully integrated. The whole sense of being, all that they can be, is fully integrated in one single unity, if you want to call it. No? Whether the absolute and liberated souls, who become, if you want to call it, their body qualities and so on. So again, we are speaking in terms of absolute reality, which is pretty different from the relative experience we may have here. Sometimes the example given is that of water with sound. No? As Krishna is not different from his name, we go for a minute there. Maybe it's the most popular way we speak about these types of non-differences. Krishna and his name, Vinatvam Namanam, you know. But we have the example of relative sound. Like if I'm thirsty and I need water, I can say water. I can invoke the sound, water, water. And I hope some of you will understand that I need water. It's not like, oh, Maharaj is just invoking the sound water to stop being thirsty. You know, that's not enough. The more I say water, the more thirsty I am. The more my throat will become dried by saying water 15 times. Hey, guys, understand, I need the element called water. You follow? I need this, the glass and the water. The sound water is not enough because sound water and water are different from themselves. That's not absolute reality. That's a relative thing. Relative means one thing is not exactly the same as. But when we say Krishna, it's not that I need. I'm calling Krishna to come from somewhere else. Sometimes we may mistakenly chant Krishna's name from that place. Like, Krishna! Mm-hmm. And who knows, we think he's, I don't know, on the other side of the mountain, or in some bubble up there, not there, like there. Or he's here. I mean, in one sense, he's there also, but the point is, he's there in his name. That's the closest you can find him. You don't need to just to take some spaceship and let's see where it's Mars. Maybe I meet him there. You can just, in his name. The most immediate way you have to address him, he's there. So that's absolute. No? You don't need to say Krishna so Krishna comes. No? Krishna is there. He's so different from. That's absolute sound, different from relative sound, like the example of the water. So similarly, this applies with the idea here of not name, but qualities. Again, Nam, Rupa, Guna, Lila. Krishna has name, form, qualities, and pastimes, but all of them are absolutely non-different from him. Srila Jiva Goswami also, well, what else in connection to this point? As we mentioned before, no? Bhagavan has these qualities, and by the mercy of Bhagavan, the devotees of Krishna inherit, if you will, and next class we will speak about that, inheritance, just in case you have something about that. So, his devotees become imbued with a portion of Krishna's attributes. No? Yajasti bhaktir bhagavati kinchana samasate guna alva bhaktasya kutumahat guna manate rasnatena sati tabato vahi, says the Bhagavatam. No? Your devotees are invested by all the good qualities by becoming your devotees. But again, this doesn't mean that one will have all the qualities of Krishna at one point, oh, we become Krishna or something like that. And as we mentioned, Jiva Rupa Goswami says there are some qualities that not even Narayan is having. Venu Madhurya, Rupa Madhurya, Lila Madhurya, Prema Madhurya. So if even Narayan doesn't have it, what to speak of us? But we may receive a portion of them in connection to him, in connection to bhakti. We can inherit them. No, bhakti is not inherent, but can be received by grace. And then Srila Jiva Goswami quotes the Padma Purana and briefly explains this typical notion of sometimes in Shastra Krishna is called Nirguna. So Nirguna means without qualities, or Aguna. So you are speaking about Gunatmana, you are your qualities, no different, but what about these nirguna statements? He has no qualities. But again, you have to understand Shastra in context. So if you have all these portions that say he has all these qualities, spiritually speaking, and then he says he has no qualities, you cannot just cherry pick one and discard the other. So the idea is he has qualities, and when it says he has no qualities, it means he has no material qualities. He has no qualities as we used to think about them, as we used to think about qualities. Guna. Guna means qualities. Also, guna refers to the three gunas. That's our most usual experience with qualities. Guna also means rope. Generally, we become tied by qualities. Sattva, rajas, tamas. So Krishna has nothing to do with that. That's the idea. He's totally beyond. And that's why he says, well, daibhi esa guna mahima mamaya duratya mamivaya prapadyante mayamitantarantite. This trigun, this Maya Shakti of mine is made of three gunas. And it's almost impossible to transcend it. But if you surrender to me, you can transcend them very easily. Implying, I'm not touched by them. I'm near guna. I'm not affected by the gunas. You are totally affected by the guna. And it's impossible for you to transcend them. Because you are there. I mean, how you yourself can liberate from... You need to be beyond the gunas to transcend the gunas. So I am beyond the gunas. I'm near guna. So in that sense, he's near guna. So Jiva Goswami further makes this point. You know, this verse and the previous one make the point of how difficult it is to understand the greatness of Krishna, who is endowed with transrational qualities, transrational gunas. Again, because the normal conclusion for us, as much as we can think for ourselves alone, is, okay, in this world there is form, there are attributes, there is variety, and there is death, and there is illusion and suffering. So this is the material stuff. If I want to go to the spiritual stuff, it must be then the opposite of this. So you kind of follow that type of sense. So if here there is form, there must be no form. If here there is quality, there is no quality. That's like the more simple way of thinking about material spiritual, like karma gyan. But bhakti is very nuanced and say, no. There is a place for that, for experiencing no form, no quality. But on top of that, there is something else. There's spiritual forms, spiritual qualities, and all these types of transrational ideas that we can even experience from this place. Like my Guru Maharaj likes to say, if I give, I receive. That's not rational. That doesn't follow calculator. If you put like 4 minus 7, it won't say 15. But my Guru Maharaj say that if I give, I receive. No. Calculator say if you give, you have less. So that's rational. But transrational means I'll tell you, I give, you receive, and you say, yes. I say, explain that to me according to logic. No, not possible. But, so that means, doesn't sound like objective, but at the same time, if you analyze the subjective experience of every single person, there will be objectivity and consensus in that subjective experience. So that's pretty objective. You follow? Some people, and this is the same with the experience of God. Of course, there are differences of experience of different transcendentalists, but there is enough common point of experience that although you may say, well, that's their subjective experience. Yeah, but you put all of them on the scale and you see how all those subjective experiences have a very deep common consensus among themselves. So that's pretty objective. If you want to make a case for we not being just like emotionalists following our own subjective stuff or whatever. And Jiva Goswami concludes saying, going back to Sankarshan, he says, Sankarshan may be able to count those particles, remember, all these atoms and snowflakes and rays, within the limits of one universe, he gives an understanding. But Mahavishnu, in whose pores reside billions of universe-like atoms, is only your amsa. No? Mahavishnu is one portion of you. And from Mahavishnu, from each pore of Mahavishnu, come billions of universes. No? He gives this type of like, try to play out all this idea. No? millions of universe, that's already like too much. Coming from pores of one person, Mahavishnu, and that person is just one aspect of Krishna, who stands in front of Brahma with one morsel of food in left hand, looking like, where are my cops and friends, Brahma? Just keep praying. I'm looking for my friends. And Brahma's like, my gosh. Like Bhakti Rasa will say, oh my Krishna. Another name for Sankarsana is Anantashesh. It is depicted also like a serpent with thousands of heads for time immemorial, or time without beginning, singing about the qualities of Krishna. Until today, I've received the updated report. He cannot find an end to that. And you will never receive a report. Oh, he did it. He pawned it. No, so, that's his very name, Ananta. Ananta. He's engaged in just singing about the qualities of Krishna. The more he sings, the more he finds new qualities. That's the astonishing thing when you approach the absolute, the infinite. The more you get closer to the infinite, the more infinite the infinite becomes. Because we now say the infinite, but what we know, what experience do we have of the infinity? I mean, Srila Sir Maharaj, who is an inhabitant from that land, he will say, the experience of getting closer to the infinite, you will realize there is no limit for progress. I mean, because this is infinite. You cannot say, I reached it. Because there's no point of reference in one sense. It's overwhelming, not negatively, but it's like you cannot claim anything there. Because it's infinite. It's not like I'm getting it, I'm catching it. You are in the infinite. You are a little spark in the infinite, which is glorious, but you have to have enough humility to deal with that, basically. And no limit to make progress. It's not like, okay, now I did it. Bhakti Thakur will say, today's perfection is tomorrow's imperfection. Mm-hmm. Not in a neurotic way. No? Appreciating today's perfection, but tomorrow something else is waiting. And that's the dynamics of the infinite. It's not that they have holidays or something in Golok Vrindavan. No? Like, oh Krishna, let's take a rest from this Astakaliya Lila. It's so exhausting. Every day, non-stop, running here and there. No end. Every single period of the day. Phew. No? Sleeping like who knows how many minutes per day or something. And you play the flute here and you play the flute there. You're too crooked. Give us a break. Let's allow us to go to Mathura for a weekend or something. Dwarka is a little bit more fancy there. Nobody is even thinking about that. As we know, when Krishna showed them, their previous, it's a way of putting that. You have a hobby problem. They want to see their next life. It's not that the Vrajavasis were expecting, hopefully we are mature and Vaikuntha floating in a cloud forever, or taking a break, just meditating in Narayana, and a little bit less dynamic. Krishna showed what their next life will be, and he kind of put a mirror in front of them, like, the exact same situation you are in, that's your next life. Then. And everyone was like in ecstasy. Great, this is the best possible thing could ever happen. So I'm saying all this because officially we want to go there. But the point is, unofficially we may be still harboring so many things that are not allowing us to go there, are actually opposing to the dynamics there. So my point is, do not get surprised thinking, why I'm not there? Why I'm not going there? I mean, you have to accept the contract, if you will, there, how life is being led there. And you have to be totally enchanted by that. Agreeing, like, fully. Two more brief words and we are finishing here. Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, please do not leave him outside of the equation. Please. Sararta Darshini. Vishwanath paraphrases Brahmaji. Here says, no one can come to an end of counting the qualities of you who engage in pastimes of protecting the universe. Not like here you are descending and showing your grace. And now comes another layer that till now was not presented. No? Because till now was, okay, even if someone can count all this stuff, nobody can count your qualities, especially in connection to you coming here and gracing me. But now, Brahma is saying through Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, what to speak then of being able to describe the most astonishing qualities that you exhibit during your sweet childhood pastimes in Vrindavan, wherein you steal yogurt from the Vraja Gopis? So what to speak of those pastimes, which has not too much to do with you've been coming as an avatar and establishing Dharma and protecting people, but being totally like lost in play, in divine play. I mean, what to speak of that? I mean, if nobody can describe or count your qualities as an avatar, as a redeemer of the world, what to speak when you are totally absorbed in Leela, in Vrindavan? I mean, Brahma is, again, having a glimpse of that. He wants to go there. And Srinath Chakravarti finishes. No, before was Bhishmanath Chakravarti. Now Srinath Chakravarti. He's the guru of Kavi Karnapur. He says, or the disciple of Kavi Karnapur. Brahma says, who was able to count the qualities such as mercy, friendship, etc. of you, the soul of qualities such as Satchidananda? The sense is, of course, in rhetorical sense, who is able? No one. Krishna replies, between the lines to Brahma here, when you say my qualities, do you mean my qualities or Brahman's qualities or perhaps the qualities of Narayan? No? Sometimes the commentators make this type of in-between jokes that Brahma saying this very serious great prayer, crying, and Krishna say, but actually, are you speaking about me? No, I mean, I'm just a cowherd boy, ordinary guy. I don't know anything. You're Brahma. You have four heads. You know so much of the Vedas. I'm totally uncivilized fellow. So actually, are you speaking about me or maybe Narayan or Brahman? So with that probability of Krishna replying to that he concludes in this verse saying, no, of you who descended for the benefit of this one, not all of for humanity, but for me, who is being seen in front of you, like Brahman making clear, no, it's me speaking about you. So in these words, we conclude today's commentary to the verse. In next verse, tomorrow, we'll start again a new section of Brahma Stuti, verse number 8. And we will continue with arguably the most famous verse of the whole Brahma Stuti. Sumati is already given the trailer of that. Tatenu Kampam Sushamikshamano, famous verse of Brahma. Which basically, there Brahma will say, what we are expected to do if we want to receive the mercy of Krishna. Here Brahma is saying, you come for giving mercy to me. So now he will like qualify that statement. That will be like the connection between this verse and the other. You have come to the world to grace everyone, and me in particular, I'm feeling that. So what I am expected to do in order to receive that mercy, how I am to live my life on a daily basis, has to really deserve, quote unquote. I mean, it's costless mercy, but what I should do to properly honor that mercy. So that will be next verse day tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll see 8 verse. Finished here. I don't know if anyone has any questions. We can have a few minutes if you have any questions. Ma mantra, yeah.
A few.
Okay.
Last one.
Okay.
I think you kind of mentioned that when Krishna's devotees and associates are mentioned, it's assumed that they have all good qualities too, like they embody all those qualities. Is that what you were saying? Like they're not differentiated from...
Well, we say different things. I say that, of course, devotees of Krishna will somehow inherit Krishna's qualities on some degree, not on the same degree that they are present in Krishna, in the sense that they do not become him. and also that another thing we mentioned is that the qualities of the eternal, the liberated personalities, devotees, perfected devotees, attain a situation where, again, their qualities are non-different from their eternal personality, similarly to how that it plays out with Krishna. I think those were the things.
Thank you. And then the original question is, I had always considered, like, we just say Krishna, we just say Krishna, 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 but there's so much more. There's Radharani and everybody. So I had read in a purport somewhere at some time that Srila Prabhupada says, when we say Krishna, we're actually referring to all of Vrindavan. It's not, but we just say Krishna, because mm-hmm. that, because he encompasses everything. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to hear if you could expand on that. Like, you're talking just about Krishna, but to an extent, are you including Srimati Radharani? And he has eternal associates that have been there all the time. And he's, to my understanding, he's kind of incomplete without. So, does that make sense?
I think so.
Okay.
Hopefully.
Okay. Wasn't
meaning.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, I'm just mentioning here the context in which Brahma is praying to Krishna and try to understand also. I'm trying to, how to say, like to give with to you as closely as the experience that Brahma is having at the precise moment. No? So it's not that still he's fully aware. Okay, Sri Radha and all the associates and all the dynamics of the Golok. I mean, that will happen eventually at the end of the prayers. He will say, Ahova Gyam, Ahova Gyam Nandago. He'll start glorifying all the friends of Krishna, how fortunate they are. But he's awakening to who Krishna actually is. So the point, he met Krishna first at the beginning of creation, and Krishna was alone there. Now, there was no Radha, no Vrindavan. It was nobody. It was Brahma and the lotus and Krishna then. So he met a certain Krishna. He had this idea, okay, this is Krishna. And now he's realizing, no. This is another Krishna. He has friends, cows, calves, picnic, mother, father. And he's someone corresponding to each of them. So Brahma is gradually awakening to a wider, broader spectrum of the personality of Godhead, the supreme personality of Godhead. This is similar, not the same, but what Uddhav went through when he went to Vrindavan. We spoke about that in the Brahmar Gita. Uddhav is the minister of Krishna in Dwarka. He knows Krishna, he lives with Krishna, he's intimate associate there. So many nice things Krishna says about Uddhav. He says he's dearer to me than my own self and things like this. But when Uddhav goes to Vrindavan to deliver a message, arguably to deliver a message, but actually to receive one, he discovers a new level of bhakti, a new type of love for Krishna that he was unaware of. And he discovers another Krishna at the same time, because that bhakti corresponds with Krishna. But that's an unknown bhakti to him. And therefore, the object of that unknown bhakti, Krishna in particular, was unknown to him as well. So Krishna is going, Uddhava is in Vrindavan, realizing, by seeing the Brajavasis and their love for Krishna, I'm getting to know Krishna in a way I never knew him. That's a new Krishna. So he returns then to Mathura, to Dwarka, and he sees Krishna and realizes, my God, I thought I knew you. I thought I understood who you are. Now I have a much more... And now I can understand many of the other moments of you in Dwarka when you were like, lost here, doing whatever. So it's different, but similar with Brahma. No? Again, he met only Krishna at the beginning of creation. Now he's like being showered with this like universe of variety and associates and diversity of prem. So he's ruminating and processing of this verse after verse. So eventually it will become more apparent that he's like seeing Krishna in relation to, seeing how you cannot have one without the other ones, no? But we could say that at this moment, Brahma is still like in his blossoming stage of awakening to all those things. Again, 5 minutes ago, he was thinking he's an imposter and all this is ordinary stuff. So now it's like, where I am? Who are they? Who are you? Who are you? Total existential crisis for the better, no? So But of course, yeah, of course we can say in the name Krishna all these things are included. But of course also at the same time we could say the more we chant Krishna Nam properly, eventually we will develop some affinity towards certain names of Krishna, which are not necessarily Krishna, no? Which again is not something that speaks less of the name Krishna. It's just like all these other different names are also inside that name, but we will go. Someone can chant Krishna to go to Vaikuntha or to go to Ayodhya. So if someone wants to go to a specific way, some names inside the Krishna name will manifest. And that's why the Bhagavatam say, Ibam Vrata Supriyanama Kirtam, famous verse, that 11th canto, the Abhadut Brahman. Say, describing someone who attained Prem by singing the names of Krishna, say, that person is chanting his own favorite names of yours. Like Guru Maharaj mentions, Gopa Kumar did in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. He was chanting certain specific names that were in connection to how he. And most of the names are in connection with associates of him. That's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions in Harinam Chintamani. He speaks about Mokhyanam, Gauranam. Gauranam means secondary names of God, like the Absolute, Controller of All, the Almighty. With all respect to those names, but they are not, they are like generic names. And Mukhyanam is specific names of God, and they are divided between Aishwarya and Madhurya. And those have to do with Krishna's or God's relationship with his devotees. That includes Krishna's Swarup Shakti and his associates. So you have Yashoda Nandan, you have Nanda Nandan, you have Radha, Nath, or whatever. So all these names that is the names speak more about them than about him, or about him in connection to them. You cannot have Yashoda Nandan without Yashoda. No, you cannot have Radha Nath without Radha. So that's included there, and that's our, of course, that's a God with worship. No? Someone who cannot be separated from his associate, from his Swarup Shakti plane itself in Lila. Anyhow, some thoughts about the name of Krishna. More ideas. We have retreat of Holy Name in Madhavan during August. So, invited.
Do you think it would be
possible to go to the retreat? Yeah.
Well, I'm just like, yeah. Yes. Yeah. But to not go to the whole thing? Or is it like a linear path of it builds up day by day?
What did it?
Okay, so I would like to go, but I couldn't go for the whole thing.
You are speaking about the retreat?
Yeah.
Oh, you continue with the retreat. I thought you had...
to go to Krishna? Yeah, but not forever.
That's a retreat, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, of course. Everything is possible.
True.
So I thought it was mentioned, a small comment. When you're talking about Krishna's qualities and the inability to count the qualities, this is totally me geeking out, but I was like, it's kind of a calculus equation. When you talk about limits in calculus and looking at trying to solve for limits, and we say like X is indeterminate because there's no answer because it's infinite.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking about that, and it was like,
yeah.
It's kind of his, trying to do that is really a calculus equation. Can't solve for it. That's what I was really like. Sorry, my geeky self.
No, great. Great. Yeah. What's the name of this? There's one famous mathematician, I forgot his name now, but he really was one of the
Indian,
like Western. Oh. Also that can be, but, and he, there's an article in the Harmonies about him, and he was presenting this idea that actually through mathematics, if you really like play mathematics out, you reach infinity. I mean, you reach a point that you can like, okay. I mean, for us, for me, who I'm not at all a mathematician, may think more, this is has no reach, but if you really even play out that, it points beyond itself. So
yeah, they say the closer you get to the answer, the more indeterminate it is, meaning that the possibilities are endless.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the one equation.
Thank you so much for the mathematical contribution. That's a good one.
Yeah. Mathematical.
No, really, really. Any other question? Okay. Mama, do I have one more?
I can just save. I have a lot. Thank you for bringing out lots
thank
of questions.
You. Okay, we continue tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you so much. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Shri Hari Nam Sankirtan ki jai, Shri Shri Radha Sarat Bihari ji ki jai, Giriraj Maharaj ki jai, Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Brahma Stuti ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Priman Haribo.